This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, how's everybody doing on a Wednesday? Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as per usual. One Bills Live is the program. We're here with you till 3. Good to have you with us. And, you know, there's some stuff kicking around, but the big pre-draft news of the day concerns LSU's pro day, primarily because they have a quarterback prospect down there by the name of Jaden Daniels, who could go as high as 2. Who knows? Maybe even number 1. So all this talk about Caleb Williams and how he's a can't-miss prospect. Remember when we heard that in the 2018 draft and everybody thought the Cleveland Browns were taking Sam Darnold?
Yeah.
And they took Baker Mayfield?
They took the right guy. I mean, out of those two.
Well, yes.
They missed. You can make the argument that the first-round quarterbacks,
the Browns weren't exactly the best environment to be dropped into either.
Well, that's true. That Baker deserved a little better, probably. But
you don't get that.
You could reverse draft that entire class. Lamar, two-time MVP. Josh, elite and like appointment viewing. I mean, nobody can take their eyes off the dude. Our guy. And then it's...
Well, you skipped over Josh Rosen.
Oh, Josh Rosen. Okay, Josh Rosen. Well,
I understand why you skipped over him.
Well, think about it, though. If you reverse the order, the second guy picked would still be a bust.
Yeah.
Although Rosen's out of the league. Isn't he? Maybe? Anyway.
I think so.
Might be. But anyway, you could reverse the order of the drafted quarterbacks in 2018, and you'd be closer to getting it right. Baker should have been – I mean – should have been if you're going strictly accomplishments, it's Lamar, Josh, Baker, Sam, Josh Rosen, right?
Don't forget Mason Rudolph in the 3rd round.
Still banging around.
He would ruin your reverse order theory.
But you think about it, but I'm talking about the first round. But
yeah,
it's fun. Yeah. Now, not 6 years, but 3 years into their careers, 4 years into their careers, now you can go back and kind of get a clearer view. Because now Baker's been on, what, 5 teams, 4 teams? And now he's finally got 4. A place. Now he's finally got a place in Tampa where he, you know, won a playoff game.
Yeah, he went from Cleveland to Carolina to the Rams for half a season and Tampa
right.
last year.
Right. And won a playoff game.
He did. So it's LSU Pro Day today, and all eyes are obviously on Jaden Daniels. But that's not all.
Oh, yeah.
Got receivers Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. also working out today. Nabers ran and clocked a 4.35 by most accounts, unofficial, and had a vertical leap of 42 inches.
42. If you're wondering, 42 inches is really good.
Yeah.
You can jump high.
It's 3.5 feet.
You can jump high.
You could put 8-year-olds underneath him and he'd clear them. And then there will be, I'm hoping there's some defensive players working out as well down there. There's a defensive tackle I like down there, Makai Wingo. Mason Smith is another defensive tackle who's relatively highly touted, although he's coming off an ACL injury. I don't think he had a really good year last year, but
right.
I guess maybe if people think he shows well here today that they could be convinced otherwise. Are you ready for this, Steve? Mm-hmm. After his pro day workout, Jaden Daniels is already scheduled to meet with the Patriots, mm-hmm. Commanders, Giants, Vikings, Broncos, Raiders. All 5 of those teams have a pick in the top 13. So that's interesting. Albert Breer tweeted that the Patriots have 9 people in attendance at Jaden Daniels Pro Day, including GM Elliott Wolf, head coach Jerod Mayo, offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt, among others. That Patriots contingent will then travel to Chapel Hill for Drake May's Pro Day coming up next.
That, to me, it's really interesting because after, you know, if Caleb Williams is going to go number 1, and who knows if he is or not, we don't know. The Bears, The Bears may take Spencer Rattler for all I know, knowing them.
I would say probably not, but
right, it is the Bears. So the thing about it is you don't know, but you start getting into these, you got to know about them. And the hard part is, we can all relate to it. You go to these pro days, and you know if you're going to if you go to Caleb Williams in USC, his pro day, mm-hmm. and you're picking third where Washington is, or no, where New England is, you know you're not going to get him, right? You're thinking
you would,
I'm not going to.
Suspect you
wouldn't. So what you do is, as a human being, you start talking yourself out of him anyway. You start saying, I don't know, and so you can kind of get around your mind that when you do take Jaden Daniels, you're going, yeah, this is the guy we really wanted anyway.
You rationalize
it big time, big time. Both for the fans,
I suppose that's human nature,
and for your ownership.
To a certain extent.
You go to these pro days and say and you start talking yourself in and out of these guys. It's hard to stay objective. I mean, Brownie and I, we don't even have any skin in the game in these things, and we're picking them. We're picking favorites.
Right. That's actually the subject of our newest podcast on Bills by the Numbers. We kind of pick our favorites in terms of prospects in the draft class. So that'll be out later today. Keep an eye out for that on whatever podcast platform you might use. New edition of Bills by the Numbers coming your way later this afternoon. Bills news, Tre'Davious White has a new home, and it is with the Los Angeles Rams. The former Bills cornerback going to sign a one-year, $8.5 million deal with L.A. The doctor that performed his Achilles surgery, the one who also performed Aaron Rodgers, Dr. Neil Atrosh, I believe is how you say it. I don't think it's Atrosh.
Yeah.
I think it's Atrosh. Anyway, he's based in L.A., so that apparently appealed to Tre'Davious as well through, have his doctor kind of monitoring his rehab on a regular basis. And certainly we'll all be rooting for him to get back on the field. The Bills play at the Rams this coming season. So if he can get back on the field before those two teams line up and play, and obviously we'll know when, come May, might get to see Tre'Davious out there.
Yeah, it's so good to see him land on it, no pun intended, land on his feet. And you knew nobody believed, even when the Bills released him, that his football was done. Certainly there's some question marks about it. When you pop your Achilles as a corner, you got a long way back.
Not to mention a year after tearing your ACL.
Yeah, so he had a long way to go, an incredibly long way to go. And, if you were there that day when he did injure it, he knew when it happened how serious it was going to be. And he was just starting to get back into the swing of things from the ACL. He'd suffered two seasons before and then finally got back on the field. And early in the season, he pops his – it's hard to even articulate – the fact that you climb this mountain to get back on the field as a professional athlete, an elite athlete playing an elite position, and then doing something else that puts you right back to the bottom of an abyss that you have to think about starting to climb out of. It is an absolute crusher. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to Tre'Davious that day. I believe it was against Miami, right? Was it in that week four
game?
Yeah, it was week four game against Miami. It was tragic. Absolutely tragic. And it changed the course of his career, no question about it, and the Bills' plans for the future. You can talk all you want about player safety and, you can't hip drop tackle. There's so many things defenders can't do. It was a non-contact injury and just absolute tragedy. But it's not over for him, and that's nice to hear. And as he goes to the Rams, I'm sure all Bills fans wish him the best. I certainly do.
Yeah. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts. Not a whole lot going on. The league meetings are over in Orlando, so those wrapped up. So there might be a little lull here between now and the draft. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some, lower-level free agent signings. We saw Cordarrelle Patterson get signed by Pittsburgh in free agency. Obviously, his former head coach, Arthur Smith, is the OC in Pittsburgh, so you kind of understand and can connect the dots there. Two-year deal for him for $6 million. I don't know. Are you a little surprised he signed there? You got Najee Harris in front of him and Jaylen Warren.
A little. I mean, I
mean, it's, that's the money, obviously, is what got
sure.
him signed.
Yeah, sure. But
I don't know, he's going to get a lot of –
If you're going to, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, most guys want a chance to contribute, and if not, be just a lead dog, you know. But I think in the days NFL, particularly at that position, you can count on being a little bit of a committee.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every single guy in the league is in that boat. Even you see McCaffrey and those guys, Saquon, Derrick Henry. They take frequent breathers. You know,
it's kind of the way it is.
It's the way it is. It's the evolution of the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, the advantage is Patterson knows the offense coming in the door. They also signed Van Jefferson, the receiver who was down in Atlanta with Arthur Smith. So Pittsburgh's got a couple of guys that kind of know the playbook already. So I don't know. Maybe that's the appeal there.
Pittsburgh is an intriguing team. I think finally, because let's face it, they had Ben Roethlisberger for 16 years, and Ben was a rare talent, could throw the football at an elite level from the moment he walked in the door, and was huge. He was a big dude, huge dude. So he could get in there and withstand the pressure. And we all remember he'd throw guys off of him and then break pocket. And he made plays outside the pocket as a younger quarterback. But he could throw an elite. And Pittsburgh, like a lot of teams do, got complacent about how important that guy was, because you kind of get tired of looking at him too. Remember, their offense struggled even with Ben there in the last couple of years. Changing offensive coordinator, and now they're still doing that. And finally, they had, you know, maybe it's the guy, and now they're swinging big to get one.
I don't know if you saw this nugget on Giants head coach Brian Daboll, but yesterday when he addressed the media, he did say he was considering taking over the play-calling duties. To me, the number one thing this signals is he knows this is potentially a do-or-die year for him in year three. Made the playoffs in year one, took a step back in year two. Got to get back there this year. So if you're gonna succeed or fail – don't you kind of want to do it, calling your own plays on offense?
Well, yeah, and let's face it. I don't know what you feel about it. He has always been one of the great play callers around. He's one of the great play callers in the game. He was.
Oh, I don't blame him. I'm just saying I think it signifies something here.
Yeah.
As far as the Giants and his career trajectory as head coach.
Maybe. I mean, listen, he's working with Daniel Jones. Your expectations have to be low. No matter who's calling the plays. I mean, you've been saying about he and Joe Shane strapped themselves to Daniel Jones, and I can see it. They painted into a corner, because if you don't sign Daniel Jones and you pick some other Jamoke, and it's just it happens, you know, it's like a Jacoby Brissett type of move, or a, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
One of the guys that is just a middle of the road guy, you're trying to transition into it, and you're coaching too good to get a good draft pick. You know, there's no end. There's no light at the end of that tunnel. So you strap yourself to Daniel Jones, and you try and make it work.
Picking and that's six all you're this year,
huh?
Picking six this year.
Yeah,
they had a couple other years where they were up high too.
Well, they picked Saquon Barkley.
No, they. I'm talking about during the Daboll era. They picked Kayvon Thibodeau. They picked the Evan Neal kid, the tackle out of Alabama.
I get it.
Like. They've had top 10 picks. Yeah. They haven't picked a quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to. I don't know what. I can't off the top of me think of what quarterbacks were available.
I know,
at the time they picked. But still, you're right. You got to make it work somehow, some way.
I think Joe Shane might make a move here. I think he's going to try to make a move. Now you got to have a team willing to trade out, and that might not exist at 1, 2, or 3. But to get up from 6 to 3 is not a giant leap.
In the old
no pun intended.
In the old days, Daboll picks up the phone, calls the team at number 3, Bill Belichick, and gives them Daniel Jones. And they do it.
I don't think they can trade Daniel Jones because of the cap hit. That might be too.
Well, you're getting a rookie quarterback, so.
Well, yeah, I know what you're saying.
I'd
be interested to see what that would look like. Well, you're going to pay him decent money as the third pick in the draft.
Right.
If you make that move. It's not like it's peanuts. especially at the quarterback position. So, I don't know. I think Joe Shane's got something up his sleeve here for draft night. We'll see. But in my estimation, you should draft a quarterback there because I'm just telling you, I've said it for 2 years, Daniel Jones ain't it.
Yeah, he's
not.
He is not it. I mean, no, he is not it. I agree with you. And I've said it before on the show, I am a big fan of the Denver Broncos under John Elway. They ran more name draft picks and free agent quarterbacks through Denver when John Elway was the president than any team in the league. They were plowing through draft picks, free agents. Every quarterback that had a pulse got it looked at by the Broncos.
Hmm.
And, you know, of course, they had Josh McDaniel picking
Tim Tebow.
And, you know, so that set them back.
Lynch is in
that
there.
Set them back. But that's I think that's how you got to do it if you're an NFL club. I am a big fan of – because this too, they had a guy at the presidency level of the club who had played the position at a Hall of Fame level for a long time. He knew what he was looking at.
Right.
And if it was not the guy, he was out. Let's get another one. And swing big. So I'm a big fan of it. If you don't have the guy, your whole organization should be focused on getting him.
Yep.
But it's that important. Don't be taking Saquon Barkley. Don't be, you know, Thibodeau. No. You got to find that guy. We've lived there, Brownie, for 17 years.
You don't
this
have
team
to
was,
remind me.
This team was E.J. Manuel and all the – just get down the list. We can
Trent
all
Edwards, Trent Edwards, J.P.
Oh
Lossman.
Gosh. All right, stop. You know.
Kelly Holcomb.
Kevin Cobb.
Who never played a game in the
regular
season.
I mean, it's like one thing after another. You're
Kelly
looking
Holcomb.
For the guy. You got to get the guy. And that and I think like the Steelers this year, they've now with
Thad
all these
Lewis.
Years. Okay. So they got they traded for Justin Fields and said, listen, I'll say this. Pittsburgh knows how to support a guy. You really do have the list.
They're coming to me slowly, but I'm getting them. They're all trickling out.
Well, some of them are great though. I mean, Fitz. You know.
Tyrod ended the draft.
Let me just tell you this. Maybe not now at his age, because Tyrod's, you know, mid-30s.
Backup for the Jets.
I would have taken Tyrod over Daniel Jones on their best day.
Well, the Giants had that option last year and chose not to.
I know. But they did hire Tyrod.
Yep.
When nobody, you know, was a free agent. They knew.
Huh?
At least he gives you a floor.
Yeah, there it is. Topic of discussion today, aside from Josh Allen, who has been your favorite Bills draft pick during the Bean McDermott era? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Just thought we'd have a little fun today. Kind of have a lull here between free agency and the draft. So we decided to take a trip down memory lane here with the Bean McDermott draft era. And let us know who your favorite Bills draft pick is during the Bean McDermott era, besides Josh Allen.
Besides
we know
Josh.
He's probably the most popular choice. But aside from him, give us your favorite Bills draft pick in the Bean McDermott era. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. Got some open lines for you.
And if you have a favorite player, then it's not because they're a great player. It's because of some other reason. I want to hear why.
Oh. What other reason could there be? I guess, yeah. He's got a great personality.
Maybe he's got blue eyes or something. I don't know, you know?
But let's go to the phones. And leading us off today is Steve in Amherst. What do you got for Steve?
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate you.
Sure.
So I'll answer the question. I had a different question, but the one about favorite draft pick. For me, I'm pretty sure Milano was during the Bean McDermott era.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2017.
He's one of my favorite players in the entire NFL. I think that draft pick, I think he was fifth round, right?
Yes, he was.
So for him to turn into what he is today, I mean, back when it happened, it was just like, oh, this is interesting. Let's see what happens. But looking back now, it has to be one of their top draft picks I think they ever made, especially for late rounds.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I have a question about is – I try to figure out the cap, right? The salary cap, and it's like a mystery. I feel like it's like the cloud, right? In the iPhone, like it's literally something nobody really can fully grasp unless you're in the business. And regarding Trey White, is there a did they actually have an opportunity to trade him, or was that due to the June 1st thing? Like, I'm just trying to understand why they didn't look for offers before cutting him. And just, you know, that's literally just a question I have. It's just kind of piqued my curiosity, as, you know, I know they probably, if they were going to think about re-signing him after June 1, that probably eliminated their thought of trading him. I'm just curious of your thoughts on that. But again, thank you guys, first of all, for keeping us engaged through the whole offseason. It's much appreciated. You guys are fantastic at what you do.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. That's very nice of you to say. With regard to Trey, the cap savings was greater if you cut him. If you traded him, there would still be cap savings, but not as much.
And
that's number one. Number two, who's to say they didn't explore trade options? Number three, I can't see, even with Tre'Davious White's history in this league, as a player who's made the Pro Bowl, has been, I believe he's been All-Pro at least once.
He was All-Pro his second year.
I can't imagine a team giving up an asset to acquire a player who had an ACL followed by an Achilles that plays cornerback. I can't see a team giving up an asset for a guy who probably right now can't pass a physical. So I'm sure if they probably made a few calls, but I doubt anybody had any interest in taking on that risk for a player who may not be the same player and give up an asset in addition to that.
And you can say what you want. There wasn't a team was going to take on his salary $17 million when he couldn't pass a physical. And for Tre'Davious, you do him a favor by releasing him when they – or letting it be known they're going to release him on June 1st so that he can go out and basically be a free agent and get the best spot and the best contract he could get. You did him a favor. You knew it was going to happen. You didn't wait and – you just made it known and called him, said, listen, go ahead. And they were, you know, Sean McDermott, I mean, things he said at the owners meeting about Trey. I mean, you get the idea of how they felt about him. It is, you know, it's a tough business all the way around. And you know, as a general manager, you can't not make obviously good business decisions. And this one turned in, because of the injury, it turned into an absolutely black and white thing. It was a light switch.
Yeah, his rehabilitation did not line up with him being healthy in time for the decision that had to be made regarding his contract and the cap savings therein. Those two paths did not line up, so the Bills really had to make the difficult decision. And at the same time, these are the facts. The guy's missed 30 games in the last three seasons. 30. I mean, 30 out of 51 games. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That's hard for a team to stomach when his salary is $16 million a year. So it became a difficult thing to undertake, especially with the cap constraints under which they were operating heading into this year.
Yeah,
so he was a big piece of getting cap compliant.
You can bet that they handled it. They handled it with as much, you know, which is much, given Tre'Davious as much latitude as they could give him, and you know, worked out for Tre'Davious as well. He's not making 16 a year, but he's making 10, and that's a big number.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's. You're right. That the cap, it all comes down to the rules. And Steve, the caller, asked what's going on with it. And it just, the Bills got the most benefit by releasing him rather than trading him. And that's why it happened the way it did.
Back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Got some open lines there. But we go to Mark in Tonawanda next. What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. For the question, I think Kincaid is my favorite. I love the last caller talking about Milano, but I think the Kincaid draft pick is hopefully a sign of things to come of just trading or using the draft for weapons for Josh Allen for a cheap price, and I hope that's a trend again this year. But I wanted to pick your guys' brain. Steve, you called the Gregory Rousseau pick. I want to know who you think we're taking this year. And this is just for the sake of conversation. I think Sean McDermott, there's a lot of pressure on him this year. I don't want to say he's on the hot seat, but I don't think it's ice cold. And if we don't make the AFC Championship game at least this year, I really think a decision has to be made on Sean McDermott. So that being said, going into this draft, and I don't think all these players – we have 11 picks, right? This roster is still so good that not all these guys are going to make this team. So why not trade up and get your guy? And I hope that's what Brandon Bean does this year. I'm going to have to listen to you guys. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
First of all, I kind of disagree with you. Certainly anything can happen during a season, no question, and the unexpected could happen, all that. But I don't think Sean McDermott is under any duress in his job at all. But everything, you know, could all change. And I don't know how Terry Pegula feels or any conversation that goes on around that, but I would be stunned if it was even a blip on the radar. That Sean, you know, more so than any other coach in the league, of course, because it's one of those professions. But I don't think that's true at all. Secondly, us calling draft picks, we do that like 2 hours before the pick. I mean, we do it the day before the pick. Not
we did nail James Cook.
We nailed James Cook, and
day
we nailed
of day two, the morning of day two.
Right. We did nail James Cook, and before that was Rousseau.
Well, you had Rousseau. I didn't have that. That was all you.
Yeah. So not today. We can't pick him. But when it gets closer, and all the, you know, when you sign Leonard Floyds and stuff like that late in free agency, or at least, you know, you get an idea of where they're headed, then maybe, but not today. Yeah. I can't. I have no idea what they're going to do today, unless it's one of those wideouts.
Let's go to Brian in Rochester next. What's up, Brian?
Hey, what's going on, Chris, Steve? So you guys were talking about the best draft pick not named Josh Allen, and the first name that popped in my head was Matt Milano, because you got a guy who's a fifth-round draft pick, and to me, he's been the most consistent and the most physical guy on our defense for a number of years now. And the other thing I was going to bring up, which you guys had talked about in terms of, you know, the Giants and some of these other teams, they're just not taking the risks and the chances to go get that quarterback. We were in a limbo for nearly two decades, and it wasn't until Brandon Bean got Josh Allen, and look what he had to do to get it. It literally took, it was like a two-year process in order for him to get up to 12, get up to 7, find the right trade partners. I'm shocked that more of these teams don't take those measures to try to go get him. If you swing and you miss, you swing and you miss, but you can't get a hit if you don't swing at all.
I would agree with you. I think you have, and you're right, it took 2 years. It took a long time for them to get there, or not 2 years, but it took a full 12 months of moves. Remember, they traded from 23 and got up to 12 with Cincinnati, and they gave up a left tackle to do it.
Right.
So what they had, you know, it's not cheap, but you got to line it up and get there. And, you know, you're right. I thought they handled it masterfully because they took their time and got there to where they could get up to their spot. And remember, if Bradley Chubb
doesn't go five,
does not fall to Denver at number five, the Bills jump to five with Denver and give up more. So all that is, and I agree with you. You got to swing big. You got to do what it takes to get that guy, and then work with what you can work with. And I say this too. Think about how difficult. I've never sounded older. But back in my day, you know, you couldn't go add free agents like you can now. You can build your club. If you got cap space, you're back in the saddle today. You don't have to wait four drafts and hit on three picks every one of those drafts to build it up around some quarterback who's waiting on you. You know, go get the quarterback and then do what you can with the rest of it.
Right, which is kind of the big thing that the Patriots find themselves up against. They've got a roster that they have to rebuild. Do you draft the quarterback and throw him to the Wolves with a less-than-ideal roster around him, or do you build the roster and then get the quarterback later? If you think this is a guy that can be your franchise guy, I think you get him, and then you figure all the rest of the stuff out.
That's right.
Because it's harder to get that guy than it is to build your roster, I think.
I mean, look, we've seen the Bills have done it the last 2 or 3 years, refurbished and renewed their draft renewed their roster through the draft and free agency. And there's good grief. They brought Leonard Floyd in after in June last year.
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys like that out there, and all you got to, you just need two things. You need that guy taking quarterback snaps, and you need cap space. Other than that, you're let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Got to take a break here, but you let us know, aside from Josh Allen, who has been your favorite Bills draft pick during the Bean McDermott era. We're wide open for your phone calls for the whole show today. So Andrew in D.C., Nick in Georgia, Rob in Connecticut. We'll get to you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to a Wednesday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And topic on the table for you today, aside from Josh Allen, who has been your favorite Bills draft pick during the McDermott Bean era. Had some interesting choices here thus far, but we're going to head back to the phones for some more. And we lead off this segment with Andrew down in D.C. What's up, Andrew?
Hi, Chris and Steve. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I want to tell you that my favorite pick besides Josh is James Cook. When we got him a couple of years ago, I really just feel like, you know, Singletary was great for us, but the Bills weren't looked at as a real run threat until this year when Cook became our number one guy. And even when he was a rookie, I think he was doing a little bit better in terms of yards per carry compared to Singletary. And in this year, when in weeks 2 and 3, I think it was, against the Raiders and the Commanders, he just took charge in over 100 yards rushing. And I felt like suddenly teams have to look at us as a real run threat. And the reason I think that's so amazing for us is because it just opens up the deeper pass for Josh, who, of course, is like our best player, our number one threat. So I just feel like Cook is our guy, and to get him in the second round 2 years ago, I think it's just awesome for us. So I want to know what you two think about that.
Yeah, Steve and I, that was the one that we kind of targeted day two. So, you know, day two of the draft starts Friday night. Steve and I are on Friday in the afternoon, and we're like, we got the guy. We got the guy for the Bills, and he's still on the board. Then the Bills trade down twice. Were you sweating as much as I was? I was like, ah! Well, they traded down again. Just take them.
Yeah. No, I wasn't. No, because I my job didn't depend on being right. Right. So, you know, yeah, we did call for James Cook because of what he brought to the table as a draft pick.
Dynamic athlete.
You wanted a guy. And we were, you know, at that point, I was caught up a little bit in the Christian McCaffrey backwater where that's a guy that makes a difference for his offense at that position where it's hard to do that these days.
And
we
Bean
thought, you know what?
Was part of a team that drafted
McCaffrey. Right, and I think, I know, maybe that we can do that too. And certainly Cook's got that skill set. I like the guy. I think, it's a great pick.
You could argue he's the most dynamic athlete on the team's offense last year.
Yeah,
Tell me somebody who's more dynamic than him on the offense right now.
Well,
I don't think Diggs is. He's not more dynamic than him.
Well, Diggs is probably more productive. At least the first half of the season last year he was. But
didn't you finish with as many Diggs yards as Cook.
Diggs can't carry the ball out of the backfield and run routes and do it. I mean, it's just Cook gives you so much. And I'm kind of with you. I think he's a Swiss Army knife. And, yeah, I'm excited
good
for
choice.
Him.
Good choice. That's a good choice for a favorite pick. I like it. Let's go to Nick in Georgia next. What's up, Nick?
Hi. Well, I know it's not on the Bean era, but my favorite draft choice in the past decade was Kiko Alonso, just because the legend of Kiko.
Yeah.
But
is it hard to believe he only played 1 year here?
Yep. he didn't play that. Now, do you like that long in the league?
Yeah. Do you like that pick more because of what Kiko did in his 1 year here, or because of what it got back in the trade in LeSean McCoy?
Both of it.
Okay.
I mean, but Greg Rousseau is probably my favorite guy just because I picked him before the draft.
Okay. So you zeroed in on him.
But my real question is, what do you guys think of the Alabama wide receiver? Pro Football Focus is really high on him, and I just don't know anything about him.
All right. Let me go to my handy dandy.
Well, I have my, yeah.
Because I can't keep these guys. Alabama wide receiver.
Why is that not ringing a bell for me?
The big kid.
Are you talking about Jermaine Burton?
No, the 6'8". kid, isn't that?
No, that's Florida State, Johnny Wilson.
Oh, okay.
So I'm guessing he's talking about Jermaine Burton, who was a Georgia transfer. Not super high on him. I'll give you a couple of reasons why. He's an unquestionable deep threat, averaged 20 and a half yards per reception as a senior for Alabama, 8 touchdowns. I think he's a crafty route runner, good at freezing DBs to get separation. Doesn't have the biggest frame. He can line up outside, I think, probably more as a flanker than a traditional split end. He has good hands, tracks the ball well over his shoulder, but this is a guy who I don't think has the character DNA for the Bills. Number one, this guy bounced around to 4 different high schools during his high school career, and it wasn't because he was an Army brat and his family was moving or stuff like that. He just hopped to wherever he thought he could win and then did the same thing in college when he was mad about not getting the playing time he felt he deserved. And look, I'm all for players looking for a better situation, but here's the thing that rubbed me the wrong way. I'm watching the college football playoff, Georgia-Alabama. Burton scores a touchdown in that game, and Alabama ultimately wins that game to go to the national title game against Michigan. After the game, he is taunting Georgia fans, the school for whom he previously played, and is actually taunting parents of his former teammates after the game. Look, it may be a small thing to some people. That, to me, that doesn't fit Bill's DNA. And so maybe you like the player. Maybe you like his production. That's a character issue for me.
There were other instances in 2022 after a loss to Tennessee where there was an altercation with a female fan. People were surprised that Nick Saban didn't suspend him.
He doesn't pass the smell test for me on that regard.
Yeah, so he's got some stuff, some baggage he brings with him.
So, I mean, will he get drafted? Probably. I think he's probably a day two pick. So he's talented enough to play in the league, but that'll knock him down some people's boards considerably. Just saying. Let's go to Rob in Connecticut. What's up, Rob?
That's all right, Chris. You can call me Bob, too. People call me Bob.
I know that bothers some people, so I'm trying to do the right thing there.
Well, actually, my parents were the only ones that called me Bob, so I'll give you a break because you're affiliated with the Bills. So
okay.
We'll go that far. How you doing, Steve?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on, Rob.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for always being here for me. You guys are my eyes, obviously. You know, I can't see, so I have to listen. There's so many. You guys have a great show today. You know, first thought was Milano, and then, you know, I was thinking James Cook. I have both of their jerseys. And then I thought about Russo. Russo was definitely a great pick for us. I was very happy with that because he has, you know, he grew up in a military background. He had the discipline. I respect him that he sat out his last year with Miami. He opted out because of COVID, but he was still able to be disciplined to come into the NFL and work with Bruce Smith, which was great. He's proved himself, and he's a great player. But also, I got to talk about Shakir. I love this kid. He is going to do stuff for us. He had a great second season.
Yep.
And just like James Cook, they both had great second seasons, and I'm just looking forward to seeing what they do for this season. But I like Shakir a lot. I even argued with Jeremy. I think he should be our number two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for a fifth-round pick.
That won't happen. Yeah. That won't happen.
Yeah. For a fifth-round pick, that's a heck of a selection. The fifth round has been very kind to the Bills, even if you just look at Milano and Shakir. You get two studs like that out of the fifth round, you're doing pretty dang good.
Yeah, that's right.
I think Shakir is – here's the biggest thing that I think Shakir got out of last year. A huge dose of confidence. And
right.
I know you can speak to that as a player at that level far better than I can, but the way that Josh came to rely on him down the stretch and the plays he was able to deliver, I think is going to do a world of good for his confidence coming into year three.
I would agree. And listen, we talk about it all the time. The third year in the league is a big year for guys. Because after they come in their rookie season and your head's spinning. One of the great coaches I ever played for was Nick Nicolau, and he'd tell the rookies on the first day, he goes, listen, you guys, you're going to get a little slack because when you come into the league, and he would draw a profile of a guy on the whiteboard, and he'd say, you get a little inflammation right here in your brain when you're a rookie, and it doesn't go away until you're in the league for a year. You just don't know how to do everything. You got to find your own place to live. Get your own, get your own vehicle. You got to find your own way to eat. You got to find somebody to cook for you or cook for yourself. You're independent. And in, Division One, even Division, lower Division One schools, those schools take care of their players that are on scholarship. So they don't really put too much on their plate. So you come into the league and you're there. You kind of make your way through. And then that second year, you're kind of trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? I got 6 months to do nothing. I don't have to go to class. I don't have to do anything. I can go home. I can live here. What do I do? And you kind of get that, and that's all new. And you play your second year, and then it's like, oh, I see. So you see other draft picks coming in, So the next year, you've got your offseason set. You're lined up, and that third year, you come in and you hit the ground running. And that's why this year for Khalil Shakir could be a year where he says, "All right, let's go." I like him too. He grew on me because Brownie will tell you I had doubts about him when they drafted him and we saw him working out. I didn't know if he was athletic enough. But I'll tell you what, he gets open, he catches the ball, and he does something when he gets it in his hands after he catches it. So he won me over as well.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Aside from Josh Allen, who's been your favorite Bills draft pick during the Bean McDermott era. You let us know. Got some phone lines open for you. More of your phone calls when we return. Jack in Rochester, Dan in Buffalo will lead us off here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, wide open for your phone calls today as we are discussing with you, aside from Josh Allen, who's been your favorite Bills draft pick during the McDermott Bean era. To Jack in Rochester we go next. What's up, Jack?
Well, I mentioned Dawkins because I think that's a tough position to find, and Bean got it right on the first swing, which is pretty good. I do have another story I'd like to share if you'll indulge me.
Yeah.
Back when the Bills were playing Dallas in December, I was with my mother over in the emergency department at Strong Hospital here in Rochester. And it was packed because it was the weekend. And so there were like two people crammed into every cubicle, two patients and people in the aisles. And there was this ominous PA system always going, stroke team, stat, emergency, treat room 6, obstetrics, emergency, recovery room 16, emergency. So the Bills game finally comes on, and I walk down the aisle, and you could see in every cubicle that game is going, every nurse's station the game's going. And the Bills win, I'm kind of happy, and then the ominous PA system starts up again. Here are patients and staff. Go Bills. And then you hear the show people kind of, come from all these sick people who are in the ED.
Yeah, it's a welcome break from the demanding job that all those people have there, for sure.
For the patients as well.
Right. Yeah, interesting story, Jack. Thanks for it. But, yeah, Deion Dawkins is a good pick. If I remember right, they traded up to get him in round 2 in 2017. Now, that was a Doug Whaley pick with Sean McDermott as head coach. Mm-hmm. And then Bean came in for the 2018 draft. One guy we have not heard mentioned yet, Steve, and you and I mentioned it, Taron Johnson, fourth round pick in 2018. And second team All-Pro last year. I mean, guy plays almost every snap on defense.
Yeah,
he's been unbelievable.
And we talk about him all the time. He is the reason that during the Leslie Frazier coordinating the defense, they never got out of that personnel grouping. He was on the field all the time. It was because of Taron was who he was and his ability to hold up in run games when they'd go, they'd go light boxes. Taron had to step up and take on, offensive linemen coming around the edge, and he held up.
Yeah.
It was, that says a lot about the guy. And
Yeah, he'd be my pick.
Yeah, I think he should. And then now he just signed his second extension. He signed a second contract, life-changing money, and now he signed another one. That's how important he is.
Yeah.
He's
still only 28.
He is a player who is, as long as he stays here in Buffalo, I mean, I think, he's going to put in at least a decade for the Buffalo Bills at a very high level. No question about it.
Let's go to Dan in Buffalo next. What's up, Dan?
Hey, how you doing? I just want to say enjoy your show. I'm more of the later rounds. I expect people in the beginning rounds to be good. That's just the way I think.
Right.
I thought these two guys were good in preseason, and not that I wish for Tre'Davious White to get hurt, but we would have never known about this guy if he didn't get hurt. I think it's Shakir or Christian Benford for being that late of rounds, the best drafts that they had in this era.
Yeah, Shakir is a 5, Benford is a 6. Yeah, I mean, those are pretty good finds late in the draft, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
You got to hit some of the – and we talked about it. You look at the draft classes that Bean has had over the last couple of years.
I mean, even Dane Jackson as a 7th-round pick was a serviceable player when he was here.
You know, Baylen Spector's still on this
6th-round
roster. Christian Benford.
6th-round pick.
Shakir, 5th round. Terrell Bernard, 3rd round. James Cook and Kyrie Elam. And I'll say this, too. I think Kyrie Elam's going to turn some heads this year. I think the coaching staff changes on that side of the football are going to give him a fresh set of eyes and a fresh evaluation of what he can do. He may get a shot at it and resurrect his career because, we've all seen he's been on a roster and he's made the team, he's been there, but he hasn't played much. In fact, famously, Christian Benford beat him out on that opening day as a rookie. So all of that stuff going on, that draft class, but it's only, this will be its 3rd year, so you expect those guys to kind of still be on the roster because – coaching staff, they takes a while to talk them out of, the quality of their draft picks. But you go back further, you got Rousseau, Boogie Basham, Spencer Brown. Rousseau and Brown are starters. Doyle has been injury-riddled. Marquez Stevenson not here, but Damar Hamlin still on the roster playing well. Rashad Wildgoose still in the league with another team. And Jack Anderson also still in the league with another team because they got plucked. They got plucked off the practice squad. I mean, I can keep going. I mean, all these guys are NFL players.
Wyatt Teller was a 5th-round pick, and he's an All-Pro.
So yeah, and
not on this roster, but
Bean is right. Like Bean rolls his every time. Oh, he every time you bring it up, he rolls his eyes. He's like, oh my god. So anyway, they're hitting it, and I'll say this too. It's not luck. It's the way they evaluate players and what they see as important in players and. When those priorities change as they get further down the roster. So, for instance, you go up in the high part of the 1st round, you're looking at physical specimens almost across the board. And you can kind of think, okay, if I can fill a need here, this guy's at least going to be in there and be able to compete really at a high level physically. And then the rest of it, the character and the skill set and their experience and the production follow along. But as you get further and further down – it's like, I want to see his DNA. Is this guy smart? Is he tough? And does he want to be really good? And then the physical stuff will take care of itself. So it changes as they move down through the draft board because you get a different quality of athlete and different reasons why guys are really good. At the top of the draft, these guys are better because they're physically faster and stronger and tougher and taller and bigger than dental students they're playing against at Vanderbilt. Nothing against Vanderbilt. I'm using them as an example.
It's a really good engineering school.
Right. Okay. But they're dental students. So anyway, that they can kind of coast through on that. But now when you get further down in this draft, you get a guy whose IQ is extremely high. He's doing more with less and will continue to do that at the next level. So they'll always kind of exceed expectations. Guys like Christian Benford, Khalil Shakir, Taron Johnson, Matt Milano. It's not, they're tough. But they're also really intelligent, and they got a work ethic, and they want to be great, so they're driven. You don't have to stand there and give them a pep talk every 5 minutes about what life's all about. They know. So the way McDermott and Bean evaluate these guys is, I'm telling you, it's better than what other teams do. That's just the way it is.
The results kind of bear that out. Got to take a break here, but still taking more of your phone calls as we begin hour number two after the break. So Sean and Caitlin in Charlotte, Charles in Amherst, and others holding at 803-0550. We'll get to you when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hour number two here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and taking a look at the Bean McDermott draft era, and just asking you, aside from Josh Allen, who's been your favorite Bills draft pick during that period of time, had some interesting submissions so far. A lot of late-round gems getting a lot of attention, as we would expect, because it turns out to be pretty extraordinary value, quite frankly, so not surprised, and keep them coming. At 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We lead off this hour with Sean and Caitlin down in Charlotte. What's up?
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Hi, let's go Buffalo.
What you got for us?
Katie got to stay home from school today for a little bit. She loves the Bills, and we all do here.
Awesome.
Dalton Kincaid, I mean, the sure-handedness. I mean, we love Dawson Knox, right? But we know about some of his drops, and I'm sure Josh loved it when he was drafted. I'm sure it gave him a little security that only Josh knows what that feels like. But yeah, just to watch him all year has been fantastic. I'm certainly excited to see him grow.
Yeah, broke the single season record in his rookie year for receptions by a tight end, previously held by Steve's teammate Pete Metzelaars. Yeah, and he did it as a rookie. So here's the thing, Steve. I look at last year's draft because people are always asking us, do you think Bean's going to move up? And I think it's largely going to be predicated on what unfolds. If he has a player in mind that he feels they absolutely have to get in round one, that they covet, and options are quickly disappearing, look at last year's draft. There were three or four receivers that I think the Bills would have considered had they been on the board when Buffalo was picking, and you watch them all go right in a row. Zay Flowers, Jordan Addison, all those slot receivers kind of went 1, 2, 3, all in a row. And you're left holding the bag, and you're like, okay, we're going to pivot here and get the tight end, but we got a team right behind us in Dallas that may like him too. Let's get up there and make sure we got our guy. He moves up one spot to do it in a trade with Jacksonville, but gets Dalton Kincaid, and boy, did it pay off. Because in the second half of the season, Steve, Diggs' production kind of goes downhill a little bit. They're still waiting for Shakir to kind of emerge, and he did, but it was right around the same time that Dalton Kincaid caught fire and really kind of delivered when Josh really needed it in the passing game.
Kincaid had 73 catches.
Yeah.
I mean, that's monster.
And I think it's only going to go up.
I do, too. I agree. I think he's only going to go up, and I think Shakir's only going to go up. And I think they're going to have plenty of weapons to do this, even notwithstanding the guy they're going to draft at 28 if he turns out to be another weapon. They got Curtis Samuel already on the roster. I mean, that this thing's a wagon. And they have done everything they can possibly do to – stay at the top of the heap, at least in the conference, and they're going to be there again.
Yeah.
So I don't know. When it comes down to it, you're right. It's fun to pick these guys and to see these guys. Now Kincaid, when Kincaid was picked, and I know Sean and Katie are saying Kincaid's their favorite guy, and he's a first round draft pick. I'll never forget that. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah, the night of the draft, the Bills picked.
Yeah.
The Bills picked Dalton Kincaid, and Daniel Jeremiah goes, listen, if the AFC, if the rest of these teams are going to let Buffalo have this guy, they get what they deserve. He was right. Kincaid, as the season wore on, more and more was the guy at tight end. And I said this, and I hadn't said it publicly until now. I don't watch Kansas City Chiefs practice. I don't know what it looks like. But you think about Travis Kelce and stuff, and him and Mahomes out there working. You see him in commercials and stuff. They got a good rapport, and it's they got to be buddies, right? I remember, and I told Brownie this, I said, I'm not going to say it on the air. And now that it's almost a year later, I can kind of say it. If the Bills had traded for Travis Kelce in the offseason last year, I would have expected Travis Kelce to look exactly like Dalton Kincaid did in practice in his first training camp. That's how good Dalton Kincaid looked to me in training camp last year. Brownie will vouch for me. I said it. And I don't want to say that on the air before the kid even takes a snap in the NFL. Right. I mean, I want to say, listen, let's wait. But that's what I thought. And 73 catches later and only 600 yards and plus limited appearances early in the season, you've got to love where this guy's headed.
Well, and I think he was one of the few examples of the coaching staff thrusting a rookie into a sizable role in the training camp setting. That wasn't something that was often done either. I mean, when Tre'Davious White and Tremaine Edmonds got put on the field day one in training camp, it's because they didn't have anybody else.
Yeah, I mean,
you now think about this team and how advanced they were with veteran players. And here's Kincaid getting thrust into a starting role day one of training camp. Same thing with Osiris Torrance. And I think you're going to see more of that this year because of the roster turnover and the departures of veterans that we've seen this offseason. I think it's going to happen again, which is why we've heard Brandon Bean say more than once this offseason, we've really got to hit on this draft. Not just good players
right.
that will develop into starters for us, but players who can help us sooner rather than later, meaning this year as rookies.
Because even so, last year when they were so deep, they were neck deep, they were odds on – I mean, everybody was pointing towards the Bills. And they were. They were a tough roster to make and all that. They weren't trying not to draft good players last year, but they knew whoever they drafted, they weren't going to have to depend on because they had some guys. They had a bunch of guys. This year – they're not so sure. They may have to plug these guys in, ready or not, so they really feel like the pressure's on them to make sure these guys are going to be the ones. Now, it brings a tough question because we've had these conversations on draft day. Some of these guys come in, they go, you know what? This guy is going to be more ready to play right now. But this, like I consider like a Xavier Leggett and Ladd McConkey in this. McConkey is, I think, you can plug and play a little bit more. Xavier Leggett, you're going to have to work him in. He's going to have to prove. You know,
1 year of production.
Yeah. You're going to have to kind of like, okay, let's try him in small doses. McConkey will be like Kincaid. You plug him in at the X and he's going to go. Yeah. But if Xavier Leggett's the player you think he is, it's not going to be but a half a year before Leggett's on the field all the time. McConkey's sitting on the bench if you have him on the same team. You know what I'm saying?
Higher ceiling.
There's a higher ceiling. So that's the question marks that come up in a year like this in the draft where, listen, we're going to have to depend on this kid right away. Now, this guy's ceiling's higher, but this guy, the floor is higher. You know? And we got to depend. You know what I mean? Those are the conversations you got to have.
Let's get back to the phones and to Charles in Amherst. What do you got for us, Charles?
Hi, gentlemen. Last time I spoke with you, I was mentioning I wanted Cook to get out in the open field more on passing routes, and he scored a touchdown that week. So let's hope I'm right about this one. Kyrie Elam. I really think he's going to have a breakout season. I think the defensive scheme, I just didn't think he caught onto it fast as we would have liked him to. But I think he's getting it more towards the end of the season. And I think with more competition coming in, I think he's going to have a breakout season as a number one, you know, first round pick. I really do. I'll hang up and listen, guys. Love your show. Brownie, you call the best games in the world. Steve, you did on CBS too. Love you guys. Go Bills.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate that. I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, Steve and I have been some of the few proponents of Kyrie Elam all the way through. I don't know. I think this is the best situation he walks into since he's been in a Bills uniform to compete for a starting job. I think there were some forces working against him, right, wrong, or indifferent. I don't think those exist anymore. And so I think that he will get a fair shake to try to win a starting job, whether they want him to compete with Benford or whether they want him to compete with Rasul Douglas on the other side. Those are the top three guys as it stands right now. I think they could draft one somewhere in the somewhere on day three to add to the mix, because you've lost Dane Jackson. You had to cut Tre'Davious White as a cap casualty. So there is room for additions there. But I think Elam in year three is going to go down the path of other year three players in Bills uniforms who have really blossomed, whether it's Spencer Brown, Taron Johnson. You can run down the list. Dawson Knox, he had a 9-touchdown season in year three. I mean, there are a long list of Bills players who in year three have really blossomed, and much like you, Charles, I think Steve and I are both hoping for that for him this year. Because he is an elite physical trait player. So if he can just put it together with the system, he can really shine.
This year might be tailor-made the situation for him to do exactly what I think he needs to do. He just needs to be on the field more.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, maybe
that'll be the best teacher.
Maybe it was because of his high ceiling but low floor that kept him off the field, because, you know, Benford, his floor was higher than Elam's was, and they were playing opposite Tre'Davious or opposite Dane Jackson or Rasul Douglas. And they wanted a guy over there that was just going to be steady, and they didn't have any ups and downs. And remember, it was even evident in the game that he played against Pittsburgh this year. He had like two plays in a row where he had a penalty, and the third play he had a pick.
In the end zone.
So, you know, that's the kind of roller coaster I think you might have to suffer through to get Kyer to the level you want him to be at. But I think that level's in there, and the consistency will be in there too the more reps he takes. And I think this is the perfect year to kind of hang in there with him until he works through that.
Yeah. Back to the phones and to Pete in Rochester. What's up, Pete?
Hey, thanks, Chris. Hey, my favorite pick is Harrison Phillips. I remember the night when Andre Reed asked Pancho Villa, a.k.a. Ezra Castro, to come up on stage.
Yeah.
And he announced Harrison Phillips. I thought that was great. And what tears me up even more was the following year when, from his hospital bed, he picked Ed Oliver. So I just those are my favorite picks, and they're more emotional than analytical.
Yeah.
I hope you accept
that. Yeah, well, I get it. Yeah. No, that's a different twist to put on the topic today, Pete. I'm glad you did it. That's certainly an iconic fan moment in the history of Bills fans, for sure. And, Brandon Bean actually called Ezra Castro in his hospital bed and said, hey, we're leaning this way. You like that pick? And he's like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. Really, I could see why you thought that, you know, from an emotional standpoint. Because I still remember Fred Jackson and Andre Reed. They're standing there at the lectern. And, you know, they called Pancho up to call the pick. And, he was blown away. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, and you don't have to apologize for having an emotional pick rather than I like it.
And Harrison, there's another guy still playing in the league. Yeah. Signed a big contract with Minnesota, still playing in the league. I don't know if anybody would call him an elite physical trait player, but he's a grinder. It's a shame he lost one of his years here due to an ACL injury. Didn't really get to play probably as much as he wanted to on his rookie contract here, but he did enough to parlay it into a nice second contract as a free agent,
right. And
he's still up there in Minnesota. Let's go to Aaron out in Oregon. I've got these West Coast calls a lot lately here, Steve. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, I'm actually on spring break. I'm a teacher, so I get to be in real time rather than listening to you guys after work. So that's why I'm calling this week. But first I want to say I'm really thankful for being in McDermott after suffering through the drought and the mid-80s. Anybody that's saying fire these guys, they need their head examined, because these guys have done amazing for us and keep us relevant year after year. So whenever I read that, I'm just rolling my eyes. But I think for me, it's Benford and then also Osiris Torrance. I was hoping we'd get Osiris in round one. And when we didn't, you know, I understood we need weapons, but I was like, oh, we need line. We need to protect Josh. And then when he fell to us, I was just elated because, everybody was mocking him to us in round one. So when we got him later,
yeah, it's like a BOGO deal.
Yeah, it was great.
Right.
So anyway, thanks for all you guys do, and I'll let you guys respond.
Yeah, appreciate that, Aaron. Yeah. Thanks for calling. I mean, we saw that leading up to the draft last year. People are like, oh, Bill's got to get a lineman, got to refortify the line, this, that, and the other. And, I know, Steve, we've talked about it before. There are a lot of people in the Bills fan base who respect offensive line play more than an average team's fan base.
Right.
Like, there is respect for the O-line amongst the Bills fan base more than maybe any other I've ever been around.
Well,
maybe with the exception of Pittsburgh.
Right.
They respect line play, too.
You really – the Bills went through it, and when Josh played as a rookie – and even in 2009, especially in 2019 when they started to build it around him, I thought they kind of got away from placing an importance on it. And then finally in 2020, they said, listen, we're going to fix it, and they did. And even in 2022, I believe, you know, they didn't feel like they were strong enough up inside, and they tried to fill it with some free agents and guys, and they said, listen, we're going to do it. And so they went out and got McGovern and drafted Osiris.
And then signed David Edwards,
and
too,
signed
as a
David
backup
Edwards.
Option.
They had Vandermark as a backup tackle. I mean, they've got some guys, and Spencer Brown emerged into his role. I mean, they got some guys. So I agree with that. I mean, you're right. Bills fans appreciate it. It's a hard league to run the football in, but I think the Bills last year were in a position where they ran the ball whenever they wanted to and not just when they had to.
Right.
And it's a subtle difference that makes a big difference when teams are lined up against them. And that's really all you're asking for. You know, it's not a running league.
Yeah. I just remember taking calls last year, and people are like, we got to get the lineman in round one. And then they go Kincaid, and all those people that wanted lineman are like, oh, God. And then in the second round, Torrance is still there, and the Bills take him. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Felt like a buy one, get one deal in the first two rounds for Buffalo. So the board really fell nicely for them after round one,
right,
where he was still sitting there for them to take in round two. Who do we got up next here? Next up is Carol in Tonawanda. What do you got for us, Carol?
Yeah, hello. My all-time favorite is Milano. I like Rousseau, too. I have to say I really enjoy watching Oliver play. He's just loving what he's doing, and he's a great player. I'm glad to hear that someone finally spoke up for Osiris Torrance. I think he's really great. He's quiet. He puts his head down. He works hard. He played every game last year, and he's one of my picks. So I'm glad someone before me had even called in about him as well. So thanks.
Yep.
Bye.
Thanks for echoing it,
Carol.
That's fine. People, I don't think people forget, but these guys play every snap on offense, every single one. Torrance to do that as a rookie in a 17-game season, not to mention playoffs.
Think about this.
That's an adjustment.
I know. It's offensive guard, and that just kind of – it's an illustration of, you know, kind of the way we all think about the game and stuff. Could you imagine a player at any other position? Like Kincaid at tight end didn't do it. Tre'Davious did way back in 2017. And Tremaine, a rookie draft pick coming in and taking every snap of the season.
Yeah.
That's big. No other position could have done it because they're not even allowed to these days.
Yeah,
not,
outside
they're
of
not allowed, but yeah, outside of quarterback, they're not even allowed to because everybody rotates. The defensive line rotates. You know, corners sometimes don't
tight
rotate.
Ends rotate.
Tight ends are rotating. Different personnel settings. Running backs, a committee, linebackers, different personnel groupings. I mean, it's really impressive when you think about the season Osiris Torrance put together.
Yeah,
it really is.
Let's go to Bill out in Old Forge. What's up, Bill?
Hey, guys, this drop hip tackle or whatever they're calling it that they're banning from the league. Hey, man, look, I saw the video that they're showing, and I'm watching it thinking he's just looking like pretty much normal tackles to me. I mean, the game's fast. The hitting's hard. That's football. That's why we love it. That's why we watch it. That's why people play it. Even the players, that's why they play it, other than getting paid. They play because they love the game. Who's going to want to play defense in Pop Warner football or high school anymore when you can't even tackle a guy? I mean, the video I'm watching, I don't understand how they're going to call that during a game. A halfback outweighs you, say, I don't know, let's go Najee Harris or Derrick Henry. They're coming around the corner full speed. You're Tre'Davious White or whoever, Kyler Elam. You're getting a hold of them, or Dane Jackson. You got them. You got a hold of them. They got the angle on you. They're a little bit behind them. What are you going to do, just let them make you look like a fool and just drag you down the field 20, 30, 40 yards? Or are you going to be able to use your weight to get them down? Do what you got to do to get them to the ground. If they call this penalty, they've already taken, you can't hit the receivers, you can't hit the quarterback, now you can't drag down a running back. If they call this, oh, my God, I don't know who's going to watch football anymore. I'm not even exaggerating either. Like, it will be unwatchable. This won't be football anymore if they call this penalty. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, I guess, how much they call it. But I honestly think the game's going to be unwatchable. I don't want to watch all offense, and that's it. We got helmets on. Let's hit each other a little bit. You know what I mean? It's tackle football. It's not flag football.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say this. It's not. It doesn't happen every play. And it doesn't happen every time a guy tackles a guy from behind. They'll figure it out. Certainly what will happen is you'll get more guys, like in finger quotes, and I used to think about this all the time when I was tackling guys. You feel like you're throwing yourself under the wheels of a chariot. You know, the old Roman chariot with four horses, and you're going to stop it. You got to get in front of the horses, right? And that's what you're going to have to do to tackle these guys. Is get in front of them, throw your head across their legs, and pull them down across your body, or grab them around the waist and get yourself around in front of them, pull them down across you that way as well. Now you still can tackle them from behind,
yeah.
But you have to tackle their gather their legs and pull them down. That's different than dropping your weight on the back of their legs. Your hips and your legs don't go on the back of their legs. So if you're going to tackle them from behind, you can still do it if you just grab them and pull them down. You just can't jump on their leg, on the back of their legs.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, you can't lift your body weight off the ground and then swing it into the lower half of the ball carrier's legs to bring them down.
Now, Bill from Old Forge, I get it. You're right. And I'll say this. I was thinking about this long term and the big picture, and it's hard to envision this because of the absolute – massive entity that the NFL is in our country and our culture. It's hard to envision it not being around. But one of the reasons it's so compelling is the physicality of these big dudes. If player safety and safety concerns and the limitations of physicality go so far, you could see that being the thing that starts to drain the interest out of the game. It's just not that physical anymore. It's just not. It's not the same spectacle that it once was. The further and further down this road that they go, or are forced to go, by the players' union or public opinion or perception or what the concussion thing or whatever it is, the further down the road they go with player safety, the further the game is going to look more like the NBA in comparison to the 1990s NBA, like current hockey as opposed to the 1960s in hockey. And if you're not familiar with that, I would invite you to go online and try and find some stuff. Because like I keep telling on this show, in the 1960s and 70s in the National Football League, it was half a step above a bar fight. But those kind... that kind of physicality builds interest. And as people's interest grew, they wanted to see guys making plays. They wanted to see guys throwing the football and catching it and running with it. But there's also got to be the other side of that. You've got to at some point be able to play defense. And we are in the midst of a trend that has been happening now, for a decade or two, over the game becoming – finger quotes, safer by not allowing certain types of tackles and certain types of defensive tactics in the physicality end of the game to happen. Where it ends, we don't know. But I'll say this, for right now, the game is still the only thing on TV. But we can all sense that maybe that will change in the future, and this may be one avenue that it happens.
Got to take a break here, but more of your phone calls when we come back. Aside from Josh Allen, who's been your favorite Bills draft pick during the McDermott Bean era. We'll lead off with Steve in Syracuse and others holding at 803-0550 when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, having a little fun, a little trip down memory lane in the draft in the Bean McDermott era, asking you, besides Josh Allen, who is your favorite draft pick during the Bean McDermott era? And we are including 2017, even though Bean didn't oversee that draft. McDermott was here, so 2017 counts. But let's get back to the phones and see what you got to say. We go to Steve in Syracuse next. What's up, Steve?
My favorite, Matt Milano. He works hard. He doesn't quit. I love the guy.
And he was a fifth-round pick, so that's a good
my
choice.
My second idea here is running back. I guess we had Harris just retire.
Right.
And I just want to know your opinion on getting another either a free agency running back or right in the draft itself. There's some running backs that could be had later in the draft. One kid I know, I don't have his name, and he's from Texas A&M. Quite a good running back, and I thought maybe that's somebody might consider. Then I also wanted to know what happened to Luke Pacone and Joe DeLamalord. Joe DeLamalord is a good friend of mine. I used to talk to him all the time before the games.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Well, thanks for the call.
Joe DeLamalord, I don't know if you heard, went in the Hall of Fame.
I think he still lives in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So he lives down there. As far as Lou, I know he lived locally for a long time.
Lou's not still sure banging around.
Not sure if he still lives here.
I see Lou at least once a year at the Ralph Wilson Memorial Golf Tournament. So Lou's a friend of mine. So at least, for my part, I consider him a friend. I don't know what he says about me when I'm not around. and the kid and the school that he said
with Texas A&M.
Texas A&M.
They've got my linebacker that I love, but...
Edgeron Brooks.
No, Edgeron Cooper.
Cooper, I'm sorry. Sorry.
You're thinking of Jonathan Brooks, the Texas running back. He's considered by many to be the best in the class. There are always running backs to be had late in the draft, and the Bills under Bean have done that, well, maybe not at the running back position per se, but... I remember they had an undrafted kid in here, Raheem Blackshear, who now is with the Carolina Panthers. There's another guy who was on the practice squad that got poached and is still in the league.
I'll say this. They signed Ty Johnson back.
Yes.
They got James Cook.
So you can afford to wait.
I would say this. They will wait, and I will bet. I'm not going to bet. I never wager, but – it's my call that the guy they do sign is 6 foot plus, 215 pounds plus. I think the guy's going to be a bone breaker, the third guy on their roster.
Okay.
So whoever – you go down the list of prospects, whether he's a seventh rounder or yada, yada, yada.
I remember the kid I mentioned on yesterday's show, Isaiah Davis from South Dakota State. They had a really good season last year, and he goes 6 foot, 218.
My guy is that kid I said yesterday, Braylon Allen. He's 6'1", 235, runs a 4.4. That's the dude.
Okay. Braylon Allen, you heard it here first.
In fact, I may write him on the whiteboard if he's available. Because he's like listed like ninth or eighth or ninth on the list of running backs in this draft. And there isn't going to be a first-round running back in this draft, I would think. So he's going to be available for the Bills in those 110 through 100 and whatever. Let's see the full order. They're the 110 through 128. Where are they? 128.
133.
133, yeah. 128, 133. They've got
160.
144, and they got a 160. Okay, so he's going to be somewhere in there, and maybe even later if he's around. He could be the 248th pick, for all I know, the 200th pick. The 204 pick, the Bills, 189 pick. So they got a ton of them. And if you're asking me what I think about a running back, if the Bills are going to take him, I'm taking Braylon Allen, 6'1", 235, runs a 4.4 out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be there on the latter stages of day three. You better get an early pick in round four if you want that guy.
He might be Bruce gone in Feldman's, round three. He made that freak list.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got some traits.
I don't know if he's going to be there later.
There you go. But if you're going to – that's the thing. Ty Johnson showed some juice last year. Brandon and I both have high hopes for him once again.
Yeah, I think he'll be the
And they got James Cook, of course, who's going to be the lead dog in the whole thing. And if you're going to bring in a young guy who's going to be sprinkled in, bring in a dude that is an absolute
– hammer.
Hammer.
Yeah.
A big dude. So that's my call.
Yeah. We were talking to Charles Davis at the Combine, and he was putting the call out. Tell Brandon I want a big hammer at running back. I was like, all right, we'll pass it along. I'm sure he's up on it, but I don't know if it's going to happen early in the draft.
Yeah.
Over to Kevin in Pittsburgh. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, Chris and Steve. It's really a pleasure to speak with both of you. I'm a Buffalo native living in the Pittsburgh area. In fact, my wife is a Pittsburgh native, and she has switched allegiances from the Steelers to the Bills. So,
wow, yeah. Kevin, well done. My goodness. That's a tough road to hoe. How'd you pull that off?
It took a few years, a lot of begging and help around the house.
But, wow, good for you. No longer a house divided. Bravo.
I got to tell you guys, when I'm at the gym, I'm not listening to music. It's you guys. I just love the show. You're both very well spoken. You really do a great job.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for what you guys do every day. Yeah, and Steve, just to let you know, my brother is a Northwestern alum, and my niece is there now. So,
very
a couple
nice.
Of connections there.
Go well, Cats!
Congrats, good stuff.
Absolutely, and Steve, I really hope you get in that Hall of Fame. You definitely deserve it, as many of us feel that you do.
Thank you.
So,
appreciate it.
Just wanted to mention, yeah, absolutely, Steve. And hey, other than Josh Allen, my favorite draft pick in the Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean era, it's a guy whose name's been brought up quite a bit here, and that's Matt Milano. And that, my vote for Matt for several reasons. First of all, it's kind of interesting. The corporation that I worked for over three decades is the same one that Matt Milano's father and his grandfather were employed by for many years. In fact, my hiring manager also managed Matt's father years later, and I knew of Matt's grandfather when I was working for this company. So, also Matt and I share the same birthday. I'm a geriatric. I'm about 30 years older than Matt, but we share the same birth date. And but most importantly, the reason I select Matt. I mean, think about it. The guy, as you mentioned before, Steve, fifth-round draft pick. In my opinion, he's really one of the bright faces of the defense right there in the middle of the D. The guy's hard nose, plays instinctively. I mean, metaphorically speaking, if he gets knocked down, he gets back up. The guy's got a nose for the ball and just really shows up every game he's in. You can always count on the guy. So he was an absolute steal in the fifth round. So Matt's got my vote.
All right. Thanks for the call, Kevin. Appreciate it. Wow. Well, there was a lot there. But, yeah, Milano. I think he's kind of the clubhouse leader right now, right? Wouldn't you say, with all the calls today?
Yeah. You could anticipate it happening. I mean, the guy's been an unbelievable player.
And an enormous value.
And he's a playmaker. Big hits, big
all
tackles.
All pro 2 years ago.
He just does so much really well, and he's totally non-flamboyant. I mean, he is totally.
He is a self-described minimalist.
Yeah,
whether it's his house,
you can picture
his
him.
Life.
The guy, you know,
he's got like two pieces of furniture.
He's got a TV, a lawn chair, and a folding table in his house, and you know that's it. It's kind of the way he plays football too. So he's a. appealing on the surface for a lot of football fans because of the way he plays, and obviously his personality is you never hear from him. He just does the job. He's a fun guy to watch, no question.
All right, we go to Judy in Buffalo next. What's up, Judy?
Yeah, I joined the program late today, so I don't know if anybody mentioned this man, and I don't even know if he was drafted by McDermott and Bean, but you know, to me, the most important person on that line is the genial giant Deion Dawkins. And I'm sure that Josh Allen shares my convictions in this respect.
Yeah, and he was a pick by McDermott. Bean was not here yet, so he does count. 2017, Judy. They traded up in round two to get him. And, yes, he was mentioned once before, but it's still a good choice nonetheless, so we thank you for making it. I mean, the guy's been a stalwart over there. I don't think there's any question about it. Multiple Pro Bowls on his resume. So, you know, and an all-star in the community as well.
He's a money player, plays a money position, and he plays it really well, and he loves doing it, and then he shows it. It's a lot to like.
Yeah. So, yeah, really good job on all the choices today. We appreciate those. And I'll check really quick to see what some of the choices were on the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Lauren said, I've only seen him for a season, but Dalton Kincaid is a star in the making. That's her pick. David says, Taron Johnson. There we go. Taron Johnson, dude, is a walking highlight reel. Yeah, he had three fumble recoveries or three forced fumbles last year from a nickel corner position. From Bill's Reddit, Osiris Torrance, because I wanted to draft him so bad, and Bean went and did it.
It's nice to be right.
Right. Ryan says, James Cook, a breakout season last year, and I believe we haven't seen him reach his full potential. Excited to see his game evolve in this upcoming season and beyond. Brandon says, Taron Johnson, even before him being named All-Pro, he was arguably the most consistent defensive player on the roster. I would agree with that. I mean, after Tredavious got hurt and missed time, I mean, Tredavious was ridiculously consistent.
Right.
Taron right there with him. Taron right there with him.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Who else do we have? Oh, Ben getting cute here.
Yeah, yeah.
Keon Coleman at pick 28 in 2024.
He's picking a guy that he wants him to draft, right, yeah.
That would be my favorite. Okay, fair enough. I like the clever way you went about answering the question. I'll give you credit for that. And then John says, Milano is the last man standing for this subject going into 2024. Stay healthy and have a stump. Stay healthy. We have a stumpy beast. I don't think he's stumpy. Maybe I'm missing the definition of stumpy, but
I don't know.
So we'll take a break here and get some final thoughts on the tweet sheet because we're up against the clock. We'll be back with some final choices on the tweet sheet here. Favorite Bills draft pick besides Josh Allen in the McDermott Bean era. We'll back with that in a second here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. Some final picks on best draft choices besides Josh Allen in the Bean McDermott era. Dan says Christian Benford. Adam says Milano. Maddie says call me crazy, but I think Dorian Williams is going to end up being a home run pick. And Philip says Trey White. Got a tattoo of him on my arm. Met his family before the Green Bay game. They FaceTimed his mom and him, both to show them my Trey White tattoo. Great player, great man, great vibes, fun to watch and listen to. Yeah, we'll miss him for sure. Steve, we've got the Easter holiday coming up on Sunday. Happy Easter to everybody out there, by the way. We will not have a show tomorrow or Monday to enjoy the Easter holiday ourselves. Give me your best jelly bean brand, because I've got one.
Brand?
It's not even close.
Or flavor?
No, brand. There is a certain brand of jelly beans that blows away the competition.
Dude, you got me.
Starburst jelly beans.
Really?
Go get a bag. You'll down the whole bag yourself.
Seriously.
And I'm not even a big jelly bean guy.
All right.
My family's addicted.
Really?
We have to get two bags like 2 weeks before Easter to make it to Easter because they shovel them down like.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm more of a chocolate guy.
Are you really? Okay.
So
you got the big chocolate bunny?
Yeah, that used to be. No, we just get the like either Hershey's Kisses or.
Oh, Steve.
Or regular. Chocolate bunny things in foil, you know, all the foil,
foil eggs,
yeah, and then the eggs, yeah, the eggs are.
I gotcha.
I'm all about that.
Okay,
yeah,
we run the gamut because I've got a family of people. I am probably the lowest on the rung of sweet tooth people in my family. My wife's the chocoholic, takes after her dad.
How many?
My son's right behind her,
right,
and then
how
my
many
daughter after that, then me.
How many, you know, holidays are there that are only about candy, like Halloween, of course.
Yes.
Valentine's Day's on that kind of track.
There's more than you think.
Easter, yeah.
And people have candy at Christmas, but it's more like
candy. I'm going to go eat some candy right now. You got me.
Enjoy Easter, everybody. We'll see you after the holiday, Easter Monday on Tuesday at 1:00.